The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, ho, 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 and welcome to Brokenomics. It is the Christmas season. Lots of you will shortly be going into debt to buy your loved ones overpriced tat from China. And I thought that at the end of this dismal year, the first year of the Labour government, who have been so much worse than even our low expectations, we would cheer ourselves up with a bit of fun. Now, whenever I need a bit of fun, what I do is I go to the channel of Richard J. Murphy. And he did a video in which he laid out an alternative budget that he would have given in the place of Rachel Reeves' ones, because apparently Rachel Reeves was not sufficiently communist and was not taxing enough. So we're going to hear from an actual sort of, well, he doesn't describe himself as a communist, but I mean, he is. We're going to listen to what he says. Now, I don't want anyone to get the impression that I am not a fan, a genuine fan of Richard J. Murphy. I think this guy is absolutely brilliant. He honestly does cheer me up. If you don't know what I mean, go to his channel, sort videos by popularity. All the top ones will be things like Nigel Farage is a fascist and everybody's a fascist and, you know, squirrels are fascist, clouds are fascists, blah, 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 blah. And you can watch his vitriol as he calls a bunch of milquetoast centrists, uni-party adjacents like Farage as these sort of goose-stepping fascists. And it's generally quite funny. It always makes me chuckle every time I watch them. I think it's valuable to give time to lunatic perspectives. And this guy, he's a professor, I think it's Sheffield University or something like that, you know, one of those second league ones, of accounting apparently, but you know, he's roughly in the financial world, and he is a proponent of MMT, which of course stands for Magic Money Tree, that we have talked about before. I think he gives an alternative explanation. Modern monetary theory, I think, is his way he frames it. But it's basically magic money tree, is his take on stuff. And he put out this video. It's sort of half an hour long, and that's sort of ideal for our purposes, because by the time I've talked over the top of it, we should get a full Brokenomics out of this, and everyone will chuckle and we'll be happy. Oh, and also, by the way, like I said, I genuinely am a fan of Richard J. Murphy. I watch almost all of his videos because nothing else makes me laugh on YouTube. I'm not making it up. They genuinely make me laugh. So I'm a huge fan of Richard's. And if he ends up seeing this and he decides that he wants to come on, then by all means, I would be your hero of mine. So you are a YouTube hero of mine. So I would absolutely love to get you on the show for a discussion. And actually, it'd be quite interesting to see where we agree, because surprisingly enough, you know, we actually do agree fairly often, not on the solutions, but on the problems. Certainly we agree more often than you would think, because I'm not a fan of the current system either, although of course I'm coming at it from a slightly different perspective. So without further ado, let's hear from the good professor about what he thinks Rachel Reeves should have done, and I'll jump in every time he sort of makes a substantive claim or two and give you my perspective on that.
Rachel Reeves is delivering her budget today, and you might well say, at last. And if you did, you would not be alone, because this has been one of the most protracted budget processes that I have ever witnessed, and I've been looking at these things for nearly 50 years now. So here we are, at last, and I can forecast that whatever she does today, it will be disastrous for her,
yes,
for the Labour Party, for the country, and for our economy, as well as individual people, most likely including you and me.
I mean, he starts off very bloody sensible, doesn't he? I mean, can't put a word wrong there.
And that motivated me to think about what would I do instead. In 2015, I wrote my book, The Joy of Tax, and in it I included a draft budget speech. It was how I concluded the ideas that I had explained throughout the course of the book. It worked well. My publisher was incredibly excited by it, and it seemed to literally bring the book together. So over the last couple of weeks, I have on the Funding the Future blog, and you should be subscribing to it, been publishing my alternative budget for 2025. And so today, in anticipation of what Rachel Reeves is going to say, I want to outline all the ideas that are in that alternative budget. Now, let me make it clear that the budget I wrote turned out to be over 20,000 words, and the budget that Rachel Reeves will deliver will probably be between 9,000 and 10,000 words, because that is the normal length of a budget speech. So I have written rather more than she did. But to assist the process, you can today download a copy of my alternative budget from our website, Funding the Future. And there, using the link that you will find down below this video, you can get the whole thing as a PDF, looking quite smart, prepared by Tom, my son and videographer, and now book producer. What have I got to say in that alternative budget? The summary is quite simple. I am saying that this should have been the day when Rachel Reeves announced that 45 years of antisocial neoliberal economic failure had come to an end, and she was going to put in place a budget that would end fear and restore hope for Britain.
So, right. Okay, going to have to jump in early on this. 45 years of failed neoliberalism, and we're going to end it and restore hope. Well, we have becoming increasingly less neoliberal over that time period. In fact, the last 15 years were the least neoliberal period in modern UK history. We've had absolutely exploding state spending, quantitative easing, money printing, effectively. I mean, he might quibble on that, but it is money printing. Relentless regulation, huge welfare, public spending payrolls. So you can't just say that it's neoliberal failure. What it actually is managerial statism plus printed money. So your solution is presumably going to be to doing more of what has already failed, only doing it with the brakes removed from the car. So I think we found our first point of disagreement.
And this was also a day when she should have announced the funding programme to rebuild this country, which I will suggest during the course of this video is entirely possible. She won't do that, of course. That's not her style, and it's not what she's going to deliver. But she should have said austerity has broken Britain's public services, but she won't, because we'll get more of it today. And she should have talked about the curse of inequality, poverty and insecurity that is now threatening our democracy. But if anything, I'm expecting her to exacerbate all those conditions today. So we have a core crisis. And the core crisis that my alternative budget addresses is the fact that this antisocial neoliberal policy has failed us. Our public institutions are now misdesigned as a consequence, and wealth bias is embedded inside our tax system.
Okay, right. So our institutions are misdesigned because they're bloated and politicized, and most importantly, they are insulated from feedback. There is no market mechanism applied to them. In fact, if they fail, they generally get more cash rather than going out of business and being replaced by a model which is more productive and adds more value, as happens in the private sector. So we're in this situation not because markets have too much power. You know, the UK tax system already heavily relies on capital and high earners. The real problem here is the bias towards unproductive assets. So, you know, housing, government debt, and these are created by the very low rate, high speed model that I believe Richard likes. So I think you've got this 180 degrees wrong.
These are the fundamental issues that should be addressed. The new understanding that we need is that our government creates all the money that it uses. And this is absolutely key to the reconstruction of Britain. There is no other idea that is now more powerful than this one, that the government is in fact in charge of our economy because it creates the thing that makes it work, which is our money. Nobody else can.
Okay, right. You've got the two sides of the ledger confused here, Richard. Okay, fine. You know, let's just grant, it's a bit more nuanced than this, but okay, let's just grant the government creates all the money it uses. What you're doing is you're confusing the plumbing with the prosperity. So, yes, the state and the banking system create money units, but that's not things, that's not resources, that's not services. It doesn't magically create skills or factories or energy or imports. Being able to print additional Bank of England tokens doesn't give you more stuff. It just changes the denomination that it changes the price level. That's all it really does. And it also, it changes who gets first dibs on that stuff. But Richard seems to believe that if you just have money, there will be stuff to buy. But no, that's because you're putting it backwards. You think the thing that has the value is the money. No, the thing that has the value is the stuff or the services or the skills. That's what's scarce. That's what's important. And if you just create more money to go after it without any thought of the stuff and the skills being created in the first place, well, you won't be able to buy them because the denomination of those things will just be bidded up. This is, again, 180 degrees backwards.
I know that people say that banks create money, but they can only do so under license from the government, and the consequence is that all the power with regard to the money that is created in this country rests with the government, and it does never need to be in hock to anyone. There is, in fact, no such thing as taxpayers' money, because the government spends out of its own money, and taxpayers refund the money that they have benefited from to the government to control inflation, whilst borrowing, as it is called, is no such thing as far as...
Okay, couple of things there. First of all, licensing the banks is not the same thing as micromanaging them. Private banks, they ration credit based on risk, and the state has a long record of ignoring risks. And if your logic is, well, because we regulate them, we should basically nationalise them, I mean, that's how you create, you know, politicised credit allocation and zombie firms and sort of permanent stagnation. I mean, by that logic, you just regulate everything and then you say, oh, well, because we're regulating it, we now own it. I mean, this is just straight up communist nonsense. And the second thing, which is even more egregious, is I think he just said there, didn't he? He said there's no such thing as taxpayers' money. Right, well, why do you need tax then? You know, in practice, every pound that the state spends comes out of somebody else's claim on resources. Okay. Right, and you can do it now via tax, or you can do it later via borrowing, or you can do it by stealth, by inflation. But you're just rebranding those costs, as if relabeling the bill makes it disappear. But, I mean, come on, make your mind up. You either want a system which is reliant on taxpayers' money to fund your communist notions, or taxpayers' money doesn't exist. Pick one. But if you're going with taxpayers' money doesn't exist, well, stop taxing us then, because it doesn't exist. Why are you taxing something that doesn't exist?
As far as the government is concerned, the government does, in fact.
And yes, I do understand how you think magic money tree, modern monetary theory works, but it simply doesn't. You're confusing money with a claim on real resources. It's the real resources that matters, not the bloody money.
Provide safe savings products for the benefit of the City of London, and it does not rely upon it. The fact is, therefore, that what is called the full funding rule, laid down by the Treasury, which says that the government must always either tax or borrow to cover its spending, is just a myth.
Okay, look. If you just call a gilt a savings product, it doesn't change the liability. The government still has to service it out of future taxes or inflation. You can ignore the funding constraints, but the markets won't. And the moment the investors, the gilt buyers, think that you don't think that borrowing matters, that debt doesn't matter, well, they're not going to lend you anything. Or at the very minimum, the yields will spike and your safe saving product becomes a panic trade.
Doesn't need to tax and borrow to cover its spending, because its spending was already covered by the Bank of England creating new money to fund it.
Magic money tree.
Instead, this process of taxation and deposit taking, which is what is really going on, and deposit taking is just banking, by the way, for people who have excess money in their possession who want somewhere safe to put it, this process is simply an exercise undertaken to provide fiscal balance within the economy, where fiscal balance means that we don't get inflation, whilst we do get growth, we do tackle inequality, we do support those in greatest need, and we do deliver against the needs of this country. That is what fiscal balance means. It does not mean balancing the books.
Okay, well, for a start, maybe with some future vastly powerful AI, what he's talking about has a hope in hell. But all the time mortals are doing this. This is pure fantasy. Effectively, what he's doing is he's reducing taxation to a purely technocratic dial. You spend first, and then you fiddle the tax after. But in reality, tax systems are political battlefields, really. They're not smooth control knobs. We're not sat there on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise with perfect feedback and commander data, sat there making these micro-adjustments. You won't get a finely tuned fiscal balance. What you get is lobbyings and carve-outs, delays, broad-brush politics, and people rewarding their friends and punishing their enemies. And even if you had the purest of motives, which nobody in the Labour Party or communists, on anyone on the left of British politics, including Reform and Tories, who I consider to be very much on the left, none of them are capable of this sort of level of dispassion that you are imagining. And also has been tried many times before and always resulted in widespread starvation and death.
So we have to end this full funding rule, and the government has to realise that as a consequence, it must take back control of inflation. And that's because tax is the single most effective instrument that we have to control inflation. Inflation is not caused by excess money in the economy. Inflation is caused by supply shocks and wars and speculation. And if it arises, and we have seen it do so because we saw it after COVID, then that was exacerbated by the war in Ukraine and the speculative activity that took place in the City of London and elsewhere as a result, then the government has to control that through excess taxation at that point of time. but it does not do so by changing interest rates, which normally have an impact 2 years after the event, by which time inflation has normally gone away.
Okay, so, right, okay, again, a couple of points to unpick here. And he kind of hit upon the key problem at the end there, which is interest rates take a long time to take effect. But he thinks that he can just twiddle taxation around instantly in order to do this. Raising or cutting taxes takes months or years, and it usually requires legislation, and it's politically toxic at precisely the time that you need to use it. So rates can be changed in a day. He says the effect takes longer, but you can actually change rates in a day. His model assumes a fantasy parliament that can calmly vote tax hikes during a cost of living crisis and survive. That just simply wouldn't happen. So, I mean, presumably you're taking the next logical communist step, which is doing away with democracy, a bit like they're doing away with trial by jury. So you might as well do away with democracy. I mean, you might as well just have the state decide everything. But, you know, this, what he's describing is completely incompatible with both human nature at this point and the political system. And then he goes on to talk about, you know, inflation is a product of supply shocks and speculation, too much money in the system. I mean, well, yeah, fair enough. I mean, I call it debasement. But supply shocks explain relative price changes. Turning them to a persistent sort of broad inflation, it requires demand outstripping capacity. You know, too much money or credit chasing limited outputs. He's just airbrushed out the role of quantitative easing, money printing here, ultra-low rates and deficit spending, and he's turning a temporary squeeze into a generalised price-level jump. The underlying issue is the debasement of the currency because they keep creating more of it, as we have covered on Brokenomics many times.
And so we have to understand that the balance of power within the relationships around the economy will now be totally reset. And this idea is at the core of what I'm saying. The city is not in charge of the economy by providing loans to the government. The city is not in charge of anything. In fact, the city simply uses money entrusted to it by savers, you and me, as ever. And it is not the city's own money. And it places it on deposit with the government, which is not very difficult for all those smart people. That's what they do with most of the money they get. They just place it on deposit and leave it, earning a bit of interest. That's it. So we should never succumb to the city ever again.
Okay. So he wants the tax and pension receipts of the whole country, but none of the discipline that capital markets impose. He basically wants all the brakes taken off the ability of the state to spend whenever it damn well pleases. And yet he imagines that people are still going to lend money. He assumes that people are going to have any money because, I mean, so much money is going to be printed under the system and people's incentives to work are going to be so utterly destroyed. The point is you can have as much money as you want. What you can't have is the underlying stuff. That requires people to take risks, to feel that they have an opportunity to profit, so it is worth taking the risk and putting in the extra time. If you design the system, people will just do the minimum, like has already been tried in the Soviet Union. And, you know, you can't treat investors as a hostile enemy. And this notion about succumbing to the city and, you know, they're not in charge, blah, 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 well, when you're going to them for money, they are in charge because they've got the money and the government ran out a long time ago and is borrowing money from them. If you don't want the city to be powerful, well, stop going to them with a begging bowl for money. If you enjoyed that content, and of course you did because you are a smart person, then why don't you go over to lotuseaters.com where you can watch the whole episode for as little as £5 a month, which really is not much money at all, and you get loads of really good content.